This is Rocky Mountain Voices, powered by PodTech.
Well, first of all, Ray was very, very smart.
In some ways, I consider him my second dad. You know, 12 years working for him was a lot of fun.
Thousands of people today are blessed as a result of Ray Norde's life and his work.
To me, Ray was like a superhero. He wasn't wearing the cape and everything else, but he was just plunked right in the middle of the industry. But he was always fighting a big fight for everyday people.
We at Rocky Mountain Voices had the unique opportunity to sit down with Ray's friends and colleagues and discuss his great legacy. Now, Drew Major, a founder of Novell.
I had a consulting group. We called ourselves Superset, and we got hired by a predecessor company of Novell called Novell Data Systems, and we were hired for 6 weeks to network CPM computers. We evolved that vision. It was in 81. We evolved that vision to build a file server for PCs and for CPM computers, but the Novell Data Systems ran out of money and didn't have any revenue going, and one day we showed up and everyone was gone, and they brought in 3 or 4 presidents, and late 82, early 83, one day Ray showed up, talked to us, and said he's the president. In fact, they kind of announced him as the president before he committed to come. We talked to him. He liked what he saw. He had some motivations, I guess, to move back to Utah. Biggest one, I think, was to try to do something good here technically. Came to Novell Data Systems, and we were literally on the last ropes. Literally the week before Ray showed up, we had a little auction, and we were selling desks and chairs, and they didn't sell the typewriters. I wanted to buy a typewriter, and that was so we could make the payroll. And so Ray shows up. Anyway, in the meantime, through this time, we caught the vision that, you know, file service was going to be kind of useful. People wanted to share. PCs needed to be connected. It was cheaper. It made the PC vastly more useful because now they talked to each other. Now they could share things. And so that was kind of the wave that we caught and figured out that the killer app for PC networking was file sharing. And Ray understood that, saw that, got excited about it, and came in and put the business around it. He was remarkable in terms of how he ran the business. You know, no one would fund us. He funded us. He would have gone bankrupt if Novell would have failed. He kind of liked that, though, because he said that focused his mind. I don't think any of us expected it to be as big as it ended up being. It was a fun ride. You know, his motivation never was getting a lot of money. The money was secondary. You know, at Novell, it was always customers first, employees second, shareholders third. But a lot of times people flip it the other way and, you know, make sure I'm taken care of first, and it distorts things. So, you know, he had that method of dealing and cultivating businesses. He trusted people. A few times the trust was betrayed, but most of the time people came through for him. And so, you know, in terms of incubating and starting things, he set a standard there. You know, personally, he was a simple man. He didn't really have a lot of needs. You know, I think the one time he kind of splurged and he kind of felt guilty about it was when he bought the jet back in 89. And we were starting to have some presence in Silicon Valley, and we had to travel back and forth a lot. So he thought the jet would be useful. But he felt kind of guilty about it. He didn't want to really splurge and didn't want to, but it just seemed very, very practical to save money. In fact, he and I went on the inaugural flight, and this was the first time I think he ever met Bill Gates. Microsoft wanted to buy our company, and Ray didn't really tell me that. He said they wanted to work more with them, but they were making serious overtures because they realized that we'd won, you know, and they'd lost in terms of networking. And so Gates wanted to buy us. So anyway, they needed to talk. And so Ray and I flew up in the jet, the inaugural flight, and we talked to him, and it didn't make sense. And I think Ray at that point finally got to really in person size up Gates and decided he didn't. He didn't want to work with him, so we didn't, and that was a good move because we were ready to explode. And then, of course, coined the term coopetition, which meant, you know, you're going to have to deal with your competitors, and you're going to want to make the solution work, and networking requires that to happen. Even though you're competing, you're still going to work together. certainly, you know, we were competing against Microsoft, yet we always made sure that we supported their platforms and their solutions. You know, that was a good change. Have learned from him and take advantage of those lessons, and as my life goes on, and you know, I'm sure I'll think of him often, and you know, in some ways I consider him my second dad. You know, 12 years working with him, it was a lot of fun.
Next, David Bradford, former general counsel of Novell.
Since working for Ray, I have learned that if you work hard and you produce results, he will reward you. He will be the first one to reward you. But if you ask for something without first deserving it, nothing would drive him crazier than that. He wanted people to get what they earned. And so one of the first encounters I had with Ray shortly after joining Novell is I said to Ray, you know, we had agreed before I had relocated from Southern California to Utah that he would give me XYZ increase in salary after 6 months. Well, 6 months went by, he didn't say anything. 7 months went by, he didn't say anything. 8 or 9 months went by, he didn't say anything. And so I finally brought it up. I said, you know, we made this move and, you know, so forth and so on. And he looked at me and he got up and he left my office, and I was just kind of stunned. And he walked down the hall. Says, I never asked for a raise ever in my life because I expect people to earn it. And, you know, the funny thing is, I think he felt that I had earned it, but the fact that I would have to ask for it was not a happy occasion for him. I got the pay raise shortly thereafter, but it was a lesson that Ray really wanted people to work and earn it before they ask for it. 1992, if anyone would have invested $1 for companies that went public in 1985, they got a greater return on Novell stock in investing in it at IPO time in 1985 over that 7-year period than if they would have put $1 in any other company in America. So that is a wonderful legacy, a great return to stockholders, and really built the technology community in many, many ways in Utah. He clearly was the father of network computing along with Drew Major, and had an unparalleled career in the state of Utah, and many, many thousands of people today are blessed as a result of Ray Norde's life and his work.
Next, Ty Mattingly, who worked as Ray's right-hand man in the office of the president at Novell.
There was that expectation to be in there at 6:30, and the reason for that is because on the East Coast, that was 8:30. And so he felt like it was very important for us in the chairman's office to be there, to be available for anyone calling in from the East Coast. And so that was an expectation. And a fun story along those lines is when I first started working with him, I naturally am an early morning guy, but I was getting in at about 5:30 in the morning because I felt like I had to learn and grow and gain a lot of knowledge and experience and understand a lot more about the company if I was going to be working that close with the chairman and CEO. And so every morning for about a week, he started showing up 15 minutes earlier than 6:30, and finally at 5:30 in the morning, he showed up and said to me, "Okay, what time do you get here in the morning so I can get here before you do?" And I told him 5:30, and then he decided, well, we're going to start meeting at 6:30 every morning. And so he didn't beat me in prior to 5:30, but at that point I changed my habits back to the 6:30. I didn't want to put a lot of undue stress on a 69-year-old person at that time.
Now, Ransom Love, former CEO of Caldera.
Well, I think this ability to almost sense and have a feel for technology and opportunities with technologies, I think is pretty interesting for Ray. In addition to that sense, he seemed to find people and get people, his ability to then get people excited about that, I think was also one of his key factors for success in the industry. He was always very interested in the abundance type on the industry, and thus, as he would look at it, he never saw things in scarcity, and thus he would look more to partnering, more to industry type activities than he would to trying to simply maximize his own benefit or the company's specifically. He felt that by partnering and leveraging with others, he would eventually be successful himself. And I think that's a pretty profound legacy.
Next, Ron Hines at the Canopy Group.
The funniest story I've told before, Kip, is a story. It's 1988, and Ray and I were traveling back to Washington, D.C. together. And I wasn't sure what flight he was going to be on. We were to meet that next morning when we arrived for a number of different meetings with government officials. I took the late flight out, and he just so happened to be on that late flight. He didn't like any of us flying business class, and of course we never did. We always used free upgrades. But nonetheless, I was getting on the plane, caught him out of the corner of my eye, walked over and gave my business class upgrade seat to a total stranger, went in the back seat of the bus, or sort of the plane, if you will, and Ray boarded and sort of waved at me, and I dodged that bullet. We got into Washington Dulles, and he asked me where I was staying. I was planning on staying at the Marriott. And he said, well, why don't you stay with me? Do you have a car? I said, yes. He goes, well, we'll just get one car. So we drove over to the Days Inn, and little did I know when Ray said, why don't you stay with me, he literally meant, let's bunk in the same room to save the hotel fare. And we did that, and I often tell that story as at the time I think Ray was probably worth well over $1 billion. But there we were together in Washington, D.C., saving shareholders money and getting up and getting it done the next morning. And it was a very funny story for me in retrospect, but I also learned a few things from that trip as well.
And concluding, Darryl McBride, CEO of SCO.
It's this idea that when you're a CEO, you're not really better than everybody else in the company. And Ray was always very self-effacing, liked to think of himself as above other people, and he didn't. In fact, I went to a CEO awards dinner with him back in New York. He won CEO of the Year for the whole technology industry. Financial Times magazine was hosting this event. And they invited him back to a black tie dinner, and you know, we're getting ready to go, and his secretary's like, you need to wear a tuxedo. Tuxedo? Why? Well, it's a black tie dinner. He's like, I'm not wearing a tuxedo. I've never worn a tuxedo. I'm not going to start today. And so I'm with him. I'm like, well, if he's not wearing one, I guess I'm not wearing one. Okay, so we go wandering into this event back in New York, and got there, I don't know, an hour and a half early, right before the cocktail dinner began, and then some people started strolling in. Everybody has, you know, their tuxedos and their dinner gowns on, and Ray looked around and said, boy, maybe we better go dress up a little bit. Cause he had on a blue coat and a red tie, and it was just kind of a Mr. Mac looking kind of suit, you know. So we started walking around. So he tried to find a white shirt and a tie so he could dress up a bit, but all of the white shirts in Manhattan were approaching $100. And so we went to about 8 stores. I'm not paying $100 for a white shirt. Are you kidding me? I can buy 4 of those back at home. You know, so we had to wander around. Finally, one of the clerks there at the Macy's or somewhere, he says, sir, you are in Manhattan, you know. Is there just somewhere we can get a cheap white shirt? He says, go next door, go down to the basement. There's a secret place down there no one knows about. You can get a shirt for $30. And so we go over there, we get him a white shirt, and then he buys a black necktie. And he gets his white shirt on with his blue suit, and then he puts on his black necktie. And he says, okay, they want a black tie event. I wonder if this meets their specifications, as he cinches up the tie, right? And I just like, okay, here we go. So we head back over to the event, and, you know, sure as shooting, we were the only ones there. I take that back. There's one other guy that came bopping in from Arkansas that was actually wearing a sport coat and slacks. So we were dressed better than him.
There you go.
But the point of all that, I guess, is he goes to the event, he does his big thing, but he just was absolutely against sort of trying to come across as being better than somebody else or being, you know, that way. And it didn't matter whether it was at work or wherever it was. He was always, I guess the final big statement I would make about that point is that Ray was like a superhero. If you think about superheroes, what do? They're always fighting, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if they're fighting, they must be bad people. They must be bad. They're fighting all the time. And then you step back and say, well, wait, what are they fighting for? They're always fighting for right. They're always fighting for good. And they're always fighting for the common man. That, to me, was Ray Norda. That was the essence of Ray Norda. He was a superhero in he wasn't wearing the cape and everything else, but he was just plunked right in the middle of the industry. But he was always fighting a big fight for everyday people. You know, the result of that over a number of years is, you know, all of these great things that have come out in the industry, in the valley, that we're all able to take advantage of now.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast, powered by PodTech. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.